Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Through the Tech Vine. So be quiet, pay attention, and get inspired. There is one truth that is not told enough. Technology is not magic, but it can be magical. Technology is human. It is part of who we are, our evolution, our future. Will it be a dystopian or utopian one? Well, that is up to us and nobody else. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
And yet there is Friday the 13th.
Nobody ever asked if we're lucky for number 13.
That's a good point.
He's lucky for us.
How does 13 feel about humanity?
Ask him or her. Is it a boy or a girl?
Yes. Maybe it's non-binary.
Or exactly, which is, it's a number.
It's not zero or one, so it's non-binary.
It's prime.
So we're live, and the reason why we're talking about
prime
number
veggie.
13, because it's the 13th episode of Through the Tech Vine. And to make it special, we're not on screen.
There's 13 of us here. You just can't see all of us.
That's right. All of those people that we said were going to be with us before, they're here now.
We have 10 guests. You'll have to figure out who it is.
But they have special voice changers, so they sound just like they're Marco or Sean or Diana.
And they know when to interchange. Spur of the moment.
Exactly.
Yep. I just got a message from our platform that says that they're having problems streaming on LinkedIn. So if you are watching on LinkedIn, I don't know if you can hear us or not, but it's not our fault. It's technology.
One of the other 10 guests.
It's technology. We don't.
That's
care.
Where they don't have the video.
It's now we're live. I think we were just late.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, LinkedIn, for allowing us to be in existence.
For letting us in.
Yeah. So why are we today not in video format? Is because this is always wanted to be a radio program. So I don't think anybody cares to see our face anyway. So here we are with our little, we have our avatar of ourselves, and you're going to deal with the audible of it.
And I just checked. We're streaming live.
Good.
Our avatars are moving on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
nice.
There is a very nice little effect of a visual effect that shows the audio is working.
Yes.
All right, so Sean, Diana, episode 13.
Yeah.
I went.
So lucky number or not?
My name says stealth. Diana says stealth. And I went rogue today. I can't wait to talk about what I found.
You went rogue?
Ooh. You want to start? Like mix it up on
the
13th
episode? We'll follow that. Follow the same model there.
Okay. It's going to make us wait.
I don't want to hijack and get into that either yet. Anyway,
well, I'm going to use
stealth and rogue. I don't know, Marco, what maybe I'll put rogue Sean and then you have to have your
stealth Diana, rogue Sean, and
Marco player one,
Weezer Marco. I don't know, Marco player one. Okay,
yeah,
I can put that. And while you go with the news that you have, I'll just scramble and look through the internet and see if I can find the news for myself.
There's
I
no
am
news.
Absolutely not prepared.
It's been a non-news week, Marco.
I am not prepared. I'm tired of news. I got to tell you this. I want a good news channel.
Yeah.
Because I am really stressed out by the news that I hear all the time. And I actually love the fact that we're trying to talk about positive thing here. And I think it's a breath of fresh air. I don't know how you guys feel about all this news.
Being
a hermit.
It's a fresh of breath air.
It's a fresh of breath. Who are you? Are you Yoda?
Yeah. Am I going to have to change my name again? Rogue Yoda?
Rogue Yoda. There you go.
We'll just change our names throughout the...
Is that the new game?
I agree. I have started to get real. There are times when I just need to kind of step away from the news, because, you know, you start reading it. And I actually went to just check it briefly, and there was the news about the suicide bomber at Kabul airport, and U.S. service members were killed. And I was like, I couldn't read the article. I just had to go away for a minute, because it does. It feels like every time you open up the news, there's some other horror, and more people are ill from COVID. And yeah, it gets to be a lot.
It is a lot. And Sean,
with you, Diana, I mean, there's been a number of articles that, yeah, you have to step away, maybe not even come back, that you get enough from the headline and that's enough.
Well, I tell you what I do in the morning lately. I just listen to three short radio news that kind of recap what's going on in the world. One is in Italian, so it's from an Italian station. And another one is NPR, and another one usually is like Apple News. And sometimes they do put a good piece of good news in there. But they think that, I don't know, I feel like there are good news out there. But as they always say, good news doesn't sell newspapers.
Yeah.
And that's weird. We always highlight the bad stuff. I don't know why. Why are we more interested in the drama?
It's humanity.
I think so.
Let me see how our conversations go today. Jacobin hummingbird. What were you about to say, Jacobin?
No, that was just the hummingbird I was talking to Marco about before we got on. So I figured I'd switch to that. But that's definitely not my topic.
Well, tell us quickly about that. I think it's really good. I love it.
Yeah.
So it was, I think it was in the science section of the Times, and it's about this kind of hummingbird. And apparently the female of the species has to make the nest on her own and raise the young on her own. In addition to that, they often get harassed by the males when they're out trying to get food. And so there's been an adaptation where some females, rather than having the normal green feathers on their head, they've adapted and they have blue feathers on their head like the males. And that keeps them from getting harassed. And I thought that was pretty cool. They adapted so that they could kind of get on with their day and not have to worry about harassment.
Is that hummingbird on Twitter too?
Oh, you never know.
Check.
How is that? So it's not just a human
thing. It'd be verified if it has different feathers.
It's just not a human thing. It's an animal thing too. Like, women have to really deal with a lot. The female species, like, give me a break. I'm going to get dressed like you. Well, that's learning, you know, Darwin, adaptation. You know,
yeah.
There's a problem. I'm gonna take care of that.
It's kind of cool, like evolution.
I love it.
Yeah, it's sort of like you know, we talk about technology, but technology is about creating things that enable us to do more or do them better, and that is a lot of when you look at nature and
I've often wondered
what happens there.
This, because I mean, we often, and I think we've even talked about this on this show and perhaps even other shows, where we routinely say humans stay the same over the centuries.
Mm.
And I'm wondering, are we not changing? I mean, are we going to grow an extra thumb because we can type faster on our phone? I don't know if that's going to happen, but are we really just staying the same as humans? Are our brains adapting?
It is.
That's
just doesn't happen in a generation. But in the long term, it's sure we are way different. But not way, but we're different from what we used to be. I mean, we're taller as a species. We live longer. I don't know if we have an extra thumb, but may happen.
The kids today have so much more information, and it's not from their own little school like some of us, and certainly our parents and grandparents grew up in a little community in school, and that was the world of information that they had available to them. And now it's global, right? And multiple personalities and identities. I mean, just this amount of information, I think, has to force a change in how we understand things. I don't know.
Oh, no, mentally for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I suppose smart neuroscientists that are studying this, but yeah, how we remember things, because a lot of times most people can't remember anything that happened before they were like 4 or 5 years old. So researchers have been digging in and trying to figure out, and it seems to align with that. Most people don't have memory without language, but we evolved from, we didn't always have language, and there has to be a way that animals that don't have the kind of language that we have, the advanced, we can share, we can write it down language, you know, like canines and felines, right? They remember, they clearly remember things. So I think that there right there is like, we can't remember without language, but we must have had brains, or we must have the vestige of the brain that could remember without language, because all the other creatures can. So yeah, I think we're changing. Just maybe it's not an extra thumb. It's something more internal. Yeah, it is what's going on.
I'm picturing an extra thumb. I don't know.
Okay.
Well. Just where that thumb grows, that's the next question. You're probably all assuming it's growing on the hand, but it doesn't necessarily have to.
No, mine is on the head, nose. So I can scratch my head without lifting my arms.
Back of the knee, who knows where it's going.
Well, you know, going back to the information, I remember reading a research a while back, many years ago, where they were saying that the amount of information that an average person would receive in the length of their life in the Middle Age, let's say 1300, would have been, this is in their entire lifespan, the amount of information you will find on a single edition of a Sunday New Year Times. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. Somebody said that, but it makes sense. I mean, you know, if you live in, I'm talking about news, right? I'm not saying the things that you learn on your own, but in terms of news that you receive from the community, from whatever state or city you were living at the time, it was extremely limited. So think about, is it ignorance a blessing there or not?
It is true. We're thinking a lot more.
never ending blessedness here.
Yeah, sometimes to reconnect at the beginning of it. Sometimes I wish that I really feel like some days I was just gonna be like, let's stay without radio, let's stay without internet, and see if I can have a really good day without worrying about things that happen in the world. And could be a good cure.
Some of my most precious times are when I'm up in the middle of the mountains backpacking with no tech.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll just say that.
Yeah. Diana, you were saying that last time about walking the dog and me listening to an audiobook, and you're like, no, you got to listen to the sound of nature, or the sound of silence.
Too. Yeah, it's the sound of the leaves under your feet and the twigs and all the critters. It's amazing what goes on out there.
Yeah. So what we're going to do today for the next half an hour, we're just going to stay quiet. And that's the show. We're just going to breathe.
Chirp like a hummingbird.
It's the Zen vine.
This is not why people is listening to this show. Oh, look at that.
What? How are you doing that, Sean?
Sean is full of resources. He plays the trumpet, he plays the drums, and now he can actually
play the hummingbird.
Imitate
bird calls.
Wow, I'm impressed. Yeah. All right, should we get going?
All right.
Let's do it. It's news time.
News time. Read the news, Diana.
All right.
Jacobin Hummingbird, I just saw your name now. Okay, I'm going to change mine too. Go.
So do you guys know what net zero is? A net zero home or a net zero build?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if our audience does.
Some do. So a net zero home, or some people might call it carbon neutral, is when you build a house that, because of something associated with the house, you're able to generate enough energy, like from a, you know, you have a wind source or you have a waterfall on your property, or solar panels are the most common. And then you build the house, or you could do this to an existing house. You'd have to retrofit it, but you create a house that a livable space where all the energy that you use for your heat and your lighting and your refrigerator and your TV and your cooling, all of that has been generated by whatever renewable source you've got for the house. So, like, again, most commonly it's photovoltaics. And this is something that's kind of near and dear to my heart, because the house that we live in now, we built 7-8 years ago, something like that. And we wanted to build at net zero. That was a big, it was really important to us to build at net zero. And we'd read about how cool it was, and we were very excited to do it. And it turned out to be a lot harder than we had realized, in part because if you want to build a net zero home, it costs about 40% more than to do a traditional build. Now, as the price of energy goes up, the argument is that you're kind of front loading the costs of energy, because for 7 years, we haven't had any energy bills. We don't pay. We live in the Northeast. We don't have to pay for oil. We don't pay for coal. All of it is generated from our photovoltaic. So in the long run, it can be really beneficial, but a lot of people can't make the choice to, you know, pay 40% up front and then, you know, make back that energy in the next 10 to 20 years. The other thing that was really hard about building a net zero home was that there weren't a lot of people that understood how to build, including because the architects need to architect a house that's going to support, it's going to be situated on the land properly so that it can get the right angle of the sun to generate enough. You know, there's the energy model is pretty complex. The builders need to know how to build a home that's going to be tight enough thermally that you can afford to heat it with the renewable energy that you're capturing. So there's a whole lot that goes into it. And we thought this is such a wonderful thing with climate change there may be issues with fossil fuel in the future. We thought this is such a no-brainer. And then as we went and actually did the build, it was very expensive and much more complicated. And so I've always been interested in things that can help others be able to reduce the cost of, you know, energy solutions that benefit all of us and be able to, you know, have more people have access to things like photovoltaic cells and newer kinds of solutions. Like, instead of having a PV array, you know a solar array when you see it. But there are some researchers that have done some, and actually there's one commercial offering of photovoltaic cells that actually look just like the roofing tiles. So you wouldn't even know somebody had a solar panel on their roof, because it would look just like tiles. But a lot of these really cool, amazing innovations are not getting out to the market quickly enough. So what I saw that got me really excited was something called clean energy test beds. And clean energy test beds are these places where people, innovators and creators, can go. It's almost like an incubator for a tech company, you know, for like a cool online Silicon Valley tech company, but it's an incubator for clean energy. And there are universities, and University of Washington has one. There's also one. There's Indiana, Michigan, California, Hawaii's Natural Energy Lab, Connecticut Department of Energy. So these are kind of popping up in a lot of different places. But what they do is they allow innovators to retain all the intellectual property about their clean energy ideas, but they give them a lab where they can start doing testing. They can do training. They supply training on the instruments for fabricating prototypes and how to use the testing devices, so that they can test them, vet them out, show that it's actually something that could be viable in the market, and then hopefully bring it to market, but without having to give up the same level of intellectual property that they might have to early on if they went to get venture before they were able to do this level of testing. So I thought that was really I was really excited to see that. And then the other kind of adjacency to it that I thought was really interesting is that with this new infrastructure bill that's being passed in the government, that there may be more dollars to put into things like clean energy test beds to help us, you know, hopefully save some energy money, dollars, you know, well spent, and also hopefully save the planet and help to reduce how quickly climate change is bringing fires and floods. So that was it, just a little really hopeful. What a cool idea. I didn't know it existed, and I thought maybe others might not know it existed too. So clean energy test beds.
Nice. And I'm gonna be funny for a second and picture all of the new jobs we're creating with this, and
all
the trucks they're getting into to drive around to the service.
They're gonna be electric.
That's right. Yeah,
that's the thing. You gotta stick with your guns.
I think you're onto something, because I mean, and I don't know, not single family homes are different from duplexes and townhomes and condos and bigger communities where the structures look different, the ownership and the possibilities look different. Clean energy test bit. Change your name. Nice. Yeah. So I, as with most technology, right, there's, I don't know how people have built this, but it's applied to a certain scenario and it works really great in that scenario. And then we try to spread it out to other scenarios or infrastructure or environments may not fit perfectly, like hand in glove. And even in the cases of where it was built for, there may be some interesting things that need to be dealt with. So I like what you're saying, that the test beds. And I guess first question that comes to my mind is, are there abstractions to the technologies such that it can fit into different places in different ways? Such that you built your home from scratch. I would imagine hopefully there will be builders that build many homes ready for this technology, or with this technology built in. So is there a way to plug in the power source? Is there a way to plug in the whatever it is that's being energy efficient in ways that are common across all the builds, so that we don't need many test beds? We can have some test beds that kind of meet all the needs. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here a bit. But.
Well, yeah, and reuse. I mean, that's true. If we start building clean energy developments, then as part of getting the test bed from the lab out into deployment, if you build a whole community, because there are a lot of developments where they build 10, 15, 100 houses. If they did clean energy, they took something out of the test bed and then implemented it in a community of maybe 50 houses that were being built, then that shows the beginning of scalability, and that could potentially then be carried over into other developments. Yeah, that'd be cool.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Is normally, as many other technology, and we have discussed this in the past, is at the beginning, there is the one that adopted, it can be like even just go to space tourist, and you have to fork $450,000 to get a seat on the Virgin Galactic, right? So, but eventually they say, well, this is going to lower the cost of going to space. It's going to be affordable for everyone. There is going to be hotels, and it's going to take forever. But as usual, the rich people take advantage of it earlier, and rich are people that can afford it anyway. And those that actually may even need it more in case of saving bills, reselling the energy that you get to the grid, and actually have not only a net zero, but even a positive bill potentially, right? Because you can do that as well.
Right.
But as you're saying, you don't have the money to invest up front to then save money. So the person that can... my grandfather used to say it takes money to make money. He was right. So the first thing that comes to my mind is, why can't we have a situation where, like, a co-hope, or like Sean said, like a community, they come together, they can lower the price. And then that is also a circle, because if the technology is adopted by more people, you lower the cost as well. So you could fast forward the entire process.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. That's what the work they're trying to do in these test beds is to do just that, have community engagement and be able to move it faster. And then, as we know, there are economies of scale. Last unit is cheapest to produce, all of that. And if you can jumpstart, maybe we can get over this hump of it's pretty cost prohibitive for a lot of people to look at net zero and bring it to something that would be accessible to all, which would be great.
But the technology is there.
Yeah.
I remember we did a podcast with with a researcher, I think it was a University of Singapore, where they are demolishing and rebuilding the area of the stadium that is right there in front of, you know, on the bay, because it's an old one. And the way I remember they was saying to do it is that they're doing it in a way that they don't waste anything. They're reusing
everything.
Wow.
Material they're destroying. The energy was the right, Sean, was the net zero concept,
yeah,
right there.
Exactly.
That is cool. Yeah, but you're exactly right. A lot of great ideas, a lot of technology is out there and available. It just hasn't been funded and developed so it can get out to people. So this, like I said, I don't know how successful these test beds have been so far, but I was really excited by the concept and could see a lot of really positive coming out of them.
Here's the question that comes often when you talk about technology or cybersecurity. I mean, do we need regulation? Do we need, you know, politician to step in and actually make these affordable, or do we leave the market take care of it?
Well, I mean, some governments have done some help there where there have been clean energy credits if you do install certain kinds of clean energy solutions. And and we're very lucky that we live in an area where the negotiation was that our energy company buys our excess energy from us and gives us credits at the same price, so that in the middle of winter here in New England, right, when our panel may be covered in snow, it's okay. We need the credits. But we're not losing anything. It's a one-to-one exchange. But I do know in some areas of the country that the energy company buys your energy at a much lower rate than they sell it back to you, which makes it very hard.
And you still need, the problem again is the entry cost.
Yeah. Right?
You have to make a big investment to eventually absorb the investment.
That's right.
And even make money that's the thing.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking about, it's technology, right? So it's, it potentially diminishes in capability and power capability and value over time. And just like many of us, we talked about this before, Dan, as well, we want the next new phone, right? We want a new car. And so what do we do with the old stuff? So I'm wondering how long net zero is net zero before it crosses a point where it's no longer doing what it's supposed to, or as effectively or efficiently as it should. I also look at the retrofit versus build new versus kind of this future view of how do we recycle and reuse and continue to upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, because you're right. Like even from when we built, now we're adding some extra photovoltaic cells to our array, and they're 30 to 40% more efficient than when we purchased years ago. So the technology is moving. So there's this one direction of we might not go back from net zero, but people with net zero homes could go past net zero, right, where they're actually adding back energy to the grid. But then there's that other piece of it, which is exactly what you're talking about. But what about the cost of manufacturing new cell, you know, photovoltaic cells? What about the batteries, right? That's a big thing in renewable energy, because they can store, you can now store and move the energy. It's very hard with renewable energy. You need some way to store it and move it. It's not, it's not like a fossil fuel. You can put it on a truck and move it. How do you store wind, right? And batteries come in, but then if you get deep down the rabbit hole on battery technology, there's rare metals that are involved, the cost to manufacture them, the cost of disposal, and it does start to, what's the balance there of we're saving energy in one way, but are we using resources from the earth in another way that's not positive? So it's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because storing it is the key.
Yeah.
It's funny. Once in a while, when I think about electricity, and I was watching a documentary very well done from the beginning of the discovery of electricity, and the key was actually, again, the storage of it.
Yeah.
Then I think when I was a kid and we had the light on the bike, that we call it the dynamo, which is it was a little generator. I don't know if you remember that, but that's how the light on the bike worked back in the 70s and the 60s and whatever it was. And it's like we were creating energy just by pedaling. I mean, it was that thing. And that's how it worked. I mean, you can have the power of the wind, you can have the power of the water flowing, they can have the solar. Well, solar is a little bit different, but it's that movement that create electricity. But of course, once you stop pedaling, the lights can, right? Mm-hmm. They just disappear. So it's like we could even create energy from anything that we do. It's the problem is the storage part. And I think we've gone a long way. I mean, cars in particular, now the autonomy of electric cars is, it's incredible respect on what it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, the capability, the range with the battery,
Mm-hmm. Or how fast can you recharge it as well?
Like, oh, that's true too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. So, Rog Yoda, any news good you have?
Yeah, so this is where I went rogue. So it's not really a news thing. It's actually something I came across Twitter, and I found it interesting. The potential for the technology seems cool. Its use is what I'm hoping we'll talk about here. And of course, we'll link to this thread. But in short, UEFA, the soccer tournament, UEFA Euro 2020. And I guess clearly this is a while back. A group of people came together and created a pool and bet each other who would win. And then they had to figure out who would win and also guess the number of goals throughout the whole process. Exactly. And one of the players was a machine. So, and I should say software, right? So some machine learning software created by somebody who knew nothing about soccer or the league or the teams or any of that stuff. And the machine won and predicted things exactly correctly over the humans. And I'll just pull a few points out here. So they effectively had to guess the exact outcome with the correct number of goals and connect the winning team throughout. And they basically used all past international football games between 2015 and 2021. So maybe this tweet where it says 2020. Oh, yeah. Because it was delayed, right, Marco? It was delayed a year. That's why 2020 and 2021. Somebody listening is probably going, "You moron."
Oh, sorry. I was laughing and stuff, and I was muted.
So. Laughing and muted.
Yeah. I'm here. Yeah, you're right.
So, and I'm not going to get into details because I'm not a machine learning expert.
You're not a machine. Is that what you're...
I am rogue, but I'm not a machine. but it was interesting because people who presumably watch this stuff and have a feeling and maybe even could do some math in a spreadsheet to help them, were outwitted by an algorithm that used data in a unique way. And so it raises a lot of questions. I mean, the fact that this is an example of machine learning, right? We often say machine learning is great. What's it used for? This is something that potentially could be applied to other things. And I'm sure it's being used in the pandemic right now for predictions and things like that. But the question is, well, I guess I'll say, it seems to me this group knew that one of the participants, contestants, competitors was an algorithm, and they were okay with that. But what if we don't know? Was kind of the question I started to raise. If we start to live in a world where things are done for us by a machine and we are competing do we need transparency for that? To, even if it's somebody using machines to augment their capabilities. I mean, we talk about athletes performing with enhancements, and that's not cool, right? So I'm just wondering, in life, where do we see this technology going? And I think we've talked about this before, Marco, kind of the digital divide, to your point earlier. Somebody with money, you can invest in machines and machine learning and technologies to help them get that advantage or that edge. Could put others without the funds at a disadvantage for things. And I know we see example of this in bots, right? Bidding on collector's shoes or bidding on tickets and things like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Again, it's not news. It was an example of machine learning doing better than a human, and the machine not knowing anything about the environment. And so it raised a lot of questions for me. So that's why I brought this to the table today.
Yeah, I think you're right that it really goes down to transparency, because if I feel that if I'm putting money into, you know, be in some sort of pool, and I think I'm up against a bunch of other people that are also using the same kind of tools I'm using, right? Our brains and whatever data we can find available. Yet there's a machine learning algorithm that could beat all of us very handily. It would feel very unfair that if I'm doing this in good faith and not being told that there's you know, somebody's got an edge. Just as it would be similar to, even though the machine learning model in this case didn't know the outcome in advance, you know, if somebody knew the outcome in advance, it's like throwing a fight, right? If you know the outcome in advance because you paid to throw the fight, then that's cheating if you're going into a pool, because again, there's not that fairness of everybody being, at least having transparency into what your competitors have in terms of knowledge going into this. So that to me feels that it comes down to just a really clear sense of fairness in a case like that and transparency. I do wonder about machine learning algorithms and AI when people genuinely don't know, are they talking to a human on the other end, and how that can be, because I think there are examples when we have bots even online, it's not always clear. The bot doesn't say often I'm a bot. It's often it's a little avatar like us, like our pictures now that are glowing, and says, hi, I'm so-and-so, a name that you think is a real human on the other end. And are they going to ask you to do something that, or, you know, persuade you to do something that maybe you wouldn't have done otherwise? I don't know. It does get really complex, but I think anytime that we have a situation where humans are being pitted against machine learning models that have been demonstrably better than them at it, that they should know if something's on the line, like they're gambling, or if there's something, some other, you know, monetary, if they're playing a game. Like when Watson went on Jeopardy, it was really clear it was Watson, you know, not a human.
Well, when you bring up gambling, and I guess the pool is kind of gambling as well against each other.
Yeah, yeah.
I think of Vegas, and I can only imagine the amount of machine learning in the machines that people on, right?
my you said that, and then I'm going to go back to other things, but the first thing that struck my brain was that people knew that an algorithm was participating in the game and they were okay with it. They obviously didn't know the capacity of machine learning, because I would have said, no way. I mean, given enough data, I think that you can make, I would have assumed they would have, that the machine learning algorithm would have won if it's a good one.
Not always. I mean, it depends on the data, what it is you're trying to predict. I mean, they're not, if they were perfect at predicting really complex outcomes from a lot of different, you know, activities, then the robo advisors would be the richest algorithms in the world, because they could predict the stock market. So I don't think that we've got. So I think maybe this algorithm, I was sort of curious if it would do as well next year.
You think he just got lucky?
It's possible.
Good point. Well, as we say,
the threat doesn't actually say whether they knew from the beginning. There is a thread that appears to be in the middle of the tournament, and it says that the machine learning is leading. It's in the leading position. And
obviously okay.
mentioned that they that it actually won. So presumably they knew from the beginning. They certainly knew at some point along the way.
Could they get their money back though if they just said, I don't want to be playing against a machine?
Who's getting the money? The coder, the machine itself.
The person trained
Was the machine old enough to gamble?
Direction. What's that?
Was the machine old enough to gamble of legal age?
Was it of legal age?
It's located offshore. So.
Okay. Well, then.
So people got bitten by a 3-month-year-old robot.
So. Go ahead.
No. I'm just kind of thinking the fact that the key is that, disclosure. You need to know you're dealing like, hello, I'm a robot. Just want to let you know this. And then we go from there. When you're pretending, then the moment you pass the Turing test, then we're all screwed.
Yeah, because I think it's about disclosure. I mean, I don't know when this might happen, but say you're in a field with a bunch of other people and the test is go find, hidden chocolate or hidden something. And one of you has a dog that's been trained on sense. That person's going to have a huge advantage over everybody else. And if they didn't know that dog was trained on a scent, they might not realize that they were against somebody who's basically a ringer. So I think that the machine learning in this case becomes a ringer in the very classic sense, and nobody likes when a ringer comes into the situation.
There's one other point here that I want to make, and so the author of this thread notes that, well, where's the data coming from that the machine learning learned from or learned by? And they said, well, you could easily scrape scores from different websites or not, but he actually said all of it's right here in this data lake on Kaggle. So the data had already been collected by somebody to do something else with it. And so I guess my point is we often say, well, data may or may not exist in the way we want it to create the outcome that we want. But here's an example of the data was all handed over. Basically accessible to the person all in one fell swoop. So connecting that and letting taking away from the football series, other data sets combined with other data sets, a lot of them already exist, right?
There's concern in the machine learning world around, sometimes it's called membership inference. There's model inversion, but some people use model inversion to mean this, but it's about trying to figure out who was in the data set, in the training data set, and even if it was anonymized. And there have been some really interesting cases of having small bits of data being able to predict interesting outcomes, like the Texas Health Department put out a list of patients that have been anonymized around just things like when they were admitted, their gender, their geolocation, and they were actually, the researchers were able to predict with high accuracy what procedure the individuals had. Now, they weren't actually tied to a name in that case, but it does raise the awareness that if we've got data sets that we think we've anonymized or retrained on sensitive data, now it's out in the wild, is it possible to start to pull some of that sensitive data by membership inference attacks on machine learning? So yeah.
Now, remember we had a conversation with EFF and with Melanie, she was with Uber at the time, and there was concern about traffic from or data from Uber being used. And I see now, if you can say somebody took an Uber to the hospital on the same day that data was also generated, and they this was the concern of that conversation. You could start to piece these things together, and that machine gets trained even better to do more things.
And attackers may be able to reconstruct it, sort of the target pregnant customer writ large, right? That of where the customer started receiving information in the mail that indicated she was pregnant based on her shopping habits and her parents didn't know. And it, so essentially the customer loyalty system figured out she was pregnant before her family did. And yeah, you start thinking about that and the next world where data is and the new oil in the sense that it's very valuable. We need it to train these machines. And if there are either public data lakes that when we lay them over are giving more information about ourselves than we want, or if through things like membership inference, attackers are able to figure out who might have been in that training set, even though that data was never published.
What if the machine doesn't know that it's a machine?
You really want very general AI, right?
Now, I read a book.
Not really sentient at this point.
I read a book. It's a fantasy book, of course, one of the many that I hear. It's kind of sci-fi. It's a short one. It's called Interview with a Robot. Again, when I say read, I actually listen. As at this point, everybody knows. And it's really interesting. It's a 12 years old robot that it resemble in everything a human being from, I mean, you look at this robot and it's human. And it also has developed some, you know, a conscience. And she is escaping from the person that created it. And I'm not going to spoil it, but she's in all and for whole conscious that she is a robot, but she developed in this fantasy work that idea that she doesn't want to be a robot because she's developed, you know, like feelings and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you're reading a book that is, you know, fiction. But it makes you think about the future of actually how we do interact with this thing. If they ever get so good, either, you know, there are those that you see, and then, you know, I think that to make a robot humanoid that really look human and fool you, it's going to take quite some time, like a Terminator. But when you are online, you don't know if I'm a dog. If you look at my avatar right now, I do have one there. But, you know, the idea that you could disguise yourself and pass the Turing test being a bot or participating in a game where you don't have to reveal your actual look.
There are some people, because I know this because after I gave a talk once, somebody who was a lawyer came up to me and said, you know, I'm exploring this as a field of like to bring into my practice, but there are some people who are sort of preparing for robot rights or yep. AI rights. Mm-hmm. And I think we're pretty far from that, but because we're really very narrow still in AI and ML, but looking at that general sentient view, there are some lawyers who are preparing to be able to defend the AI against abuse, which will be, I don't know if we'll see that in our lifetime, but it's certainly an interesting.
All right.
Life. Bring a robot coming in and say, this place sucks and you brought me into this.
Right. Well, or like that robot, the hitchhiker robot, you know, that like went around.
The depressed one?
Yeah.
Marvin?
It went around Europe and I think Canada and it was hitchhiking and it was.
Oh, sorry. That one. I thought you were talking about the Hitchhiker Guide to the Universe.
Oh, no.
Where you have Marvin, the depressed robot.
Oh, right.
So funny.
Yeah.
Sorry. The one that actually they beat up. Very sad.
Yeah, it got beaten up. They put it into the US and I think it was outside of Philly that it got beaten up. But was that robot abuse? Do we have to create a whole legal practice to prevent robot abuse?
I think it's more private property abuse. I don't know. Do you ever think, do you think that ever will be a time where a machine will be sentient and all and for all human? I don't know. I want to think that. I read books, stories in my head, and But when I really think about it, I'm not sure.
Yeah, on a long enough time horizon, maybe. But looking at where we are now, I think we've got a long way to go to increase the intelligence and artificial intelligence.
Not even about intelligence. This is about feeling,
awareness,
conscious,
yeah.
Awareness. It's, yeah. I mean, I think, as we said many times, artificial intelligence is not the right name.
Yeah.
It's artificial something else.
I mean, think about how hard it is. You go back and you read Asimov, and we were going to have basically, you know, housekeeping robots, you know, mm-hmm. And they were going to be making decisions. And it turns out that none of us I'm not going to call the Roomba really much of a housekeeping robot. You know, until something can like strip my bed, put the stuff in the wash and then make the bed again, I feel like we don't have housekeeping robots. So thinking about how hard that is and how far away, I mean, does anybody even have a prototype of a robot that can do something like that? Mm-hmm. And I know that's action versus feeling, but feeling, we didn't understand how difficult it would be to create a robot that could make a bed, right? Think about what about our feelings and emotions that we don't know are so much more complex than we realize. So I'm thinking it's harder than we think.
But you know what? Why do we want, and I'm just at this point, I'm going to make a little note of my news at the end, but I just love this conversation because that's why I think a lot. It's why do we actually want a robot to have feelings? Why don't we just want a robot that is a robot? Why don't we just want a computer that is smart to do certain things better than us because it can calculate so much faster? But why do I want it to have feeling? Why do I have to recreate? Why do I have to play God or nature? I sometimes I wonder that. Do I want that? Do we want that?
Do you? I mean, clearly, I think people can pick up. I want a robot that's going to do my laundry for me, you know?
Right. But do you care if it has feeling?
No, I don't want it to have a feeling because I would feel bad then about, well, right. Do you need to rest? Is it boring doing the laundry? You know, all these things that I would worry about. Whereas if it doesn't have feelings, then great, do the laundry.
Unless it's programmed to love doing laundry, then it's in bliss all the time.
Oh, okay. All right. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. Well, wants to do more laundry.
That's right. Please.
I guess it depends on the function. If you're looking to, as we spoke in the past about a robot that is made for companionship or a robot that is a medical assistant robot that, you know, I'm thinking Disney movies now, but unless that's the specific reason why you're doing that to create empathy, and I think that's going to be tough. But I think we will have many robots in our everyday life. They just, each one is going to do a specific thing. They're already there. You know, there is the Roomba. There is the one, like, you know, maybe soon enough, there is going to be one that is articulated enough to move arms and make the bed. But that's all it does. And that's it.
Well, I'll have to have giant robot closets. And then we push the button and the dishwashing robot comes out of the closet. Yeah,
you better you push a button and it kind of like, you know, like the old Japanese robot that they're miniature robot, but then they become super big.
Transformer.
Yeah. Well, no, even bigger than that.
Well, I'm just thinking that the feelings, maybe it's less internal feelings and more external. So empathy and compassion. I'm about to do something that may harm this person or make them feel bad themselves, or the other person feel bad by my actions. So maybe we need the feelings for that, but less about what they have for themselves. I don't know.
Maybe we need to create a rude robot, like a robot that doesn't give a shit.
like a Sid Vicious robot.
It's just like, yeah, you can, when you pick the personality of the robot, you know, you go at the robot store in the mall, Imagine that. You decide what it's going to look like. Is it going to be a cube? Is it going to have arms? Is it going to be humanoid? Is it going to be looking like a dog or nothing like that? Maybe like a spider. And then you choose the personality. You know, you want it to be nice. You want it to be empathetic. You want it to be funny. Or do you want it to be an ass? Just like challenge you, like
I feel
everything
like,
you do.
Yeah, I feel like you'd want a robot that you could probably program to be what you're in the mood for, right? Because if you got the robot that was always a jerk, you'd probably get tired really. Like, I got to bring this back. But you could.
And you're like, I can't stand this thing. And the salesperson is going to say, you choose that.
That's right. You bought it.
You bought it. You actually asked for a rude robot. I'm going to register ruderobot.com. So
rude.robot.
Do you know that in...
I do.
On August 25th, which was yesterday, but 1835, the first in a series of six articles announcing the supposed discovery of life on the moon appears in the New York Sun newspaper, which is not the New York Sun we have now. So there was these oaks that in 1835, everybody believed in it, that there was many people living on the moon. According to Reverend Thomas Dick, a popular science writer, he claimed that is in a best-selling book that the moon alone had 4.2 billion inhabitants. Apparently, everybody believed this. And then the funny
go for it, go big.
That's right. Yeah, it's not just a colony.
It was an entire story that people believe because you know people like to believe things. Like you know, remember
I want
the.
To believe.
Yeah, remember that. Well, the aliens life is another story, but this one in particular, like you know, it remind me the Wells World of the War broadcasting and that we mentioned a few times in Halloween back in the days where everybody believed that the alien did arrive on Earth, and so for a while, a lot of people believed that there were people living on the moon. A lot of them. Yeah. And how I got to that is because now there is this new discovery of planets that apparently can have life in it. They're called Icyan exoplanets. So they are big planets covering water, really hot, but they have a lot of hydrogen because it's in the water. And potentially, there is life in there.
I just hope it's friendly, right? Because we could.
It's millions of light years away, so we shouldn't be worried. But
billions okay. even have right, Mark?
All right. I just hope whoever comes and finds us, if they ever do, that they're at least friendly, and it's not like that Twilight Zone episode to serve humans. You know, they've got the cookbook, and it's a cookbook about how to serve. They thought they came to help us out, but really they were just coming to eat our delicious flesh.
If they can travel all the way here, I'm sure they're going to find something better to do, unless we're really, really delicious than eating us. Maybe they need to create a highway, and the highway has to pass where the planet is. Mm-hmm. We can.
It'll be a rest stop.
There is a book about that. But Sean, you remember we talked with Jazz, Astro Jazz, about the zoo theory.
Yeah.
Where aliens do exist. They are observing us.
They're too smart.
We are in a cage, like in a zoo. And but they're not too smart. They're just like, yeah, let's see what they do. They're not going to annihilate themselves.
They fling poo at each other.
Oh, we went all over the place today.
Oh, my goodness.
I love it. Always fun. At this point, I'm not even prepared anything anymore. I let you guys do it. And then there is the birds, the hummingbird.
Hummingbird, full circle, back to the hummingbird.
Back to the birds.
Full circle, back to the birds. All right. Well, it was fun. I learned a lot from you guys. And I have a lot to think about.
Okay.
Most definitely. I gotta hone my machine learning capabilities.
If you can build a machine learning that can guess the lottery tickets or gamble, let me know. And we'll split in three equal parts.
Yeah, just let us know. We won't tell anyone else.
There was a comment in the thread, the ultimate lotto number is the code to crack crypto.
Ah, nice. I like it.
The number is 42.
It's all lotto. That's all lottery.
Always 42.
No question about it.
Right on.
Well, and with that,
let's all go net zero.
All right.
With that, we are at 59 minutes and 45 seconds, and I'm gonna hit that red button in exactly 8 seconds. So say goodbye.
All right,
everybody. Five.
Bye, everybody.
Four, three, two, one. See ya.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Through the Tech Vine podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.